Hashtag Revenge, brought to you by
Norpig. Warning, you are now entering the Blue Tiger 10, the intellectual dark web of comic book podcasting. Revenge is upon you.
Hit the music.
You smell that, folks? Do you? That fresh tiger milk? That's right. That means that you're running down the game trail of the comic book forest and everything that's adjacent, because this is Blue Tiger Revenge. I am comic book creator, failed pitch machine, guy that you know and love, your Inkway to the airwaves, and with me, Mr. Baseball himself, old big dog, the big dog on the mound. That's right. He's like Ichiro if Ichiro was 8 feet tall and had a giant beard. You love him. I tolerate him in moderate doses. That's right. The heart and soul. Big Brian Bales. What's up, Big Brian?
Not much. You know, and I've been thinking, it's 2024, right? You know, we're a few months in. We're a few months into 2024. I think that it's time.
For what?
I think it's time to add to the intro.
I'm 100%. I mean, it's not long enough.
It's not long enough. Yeah, exactly.
You realize most podcasts are like, hey, welcome to title.
Yeah.
Now we're starting the episode, and we have this just long, like, 10 minutes of just,
Yeah. It's because the best doesn't cut corners. You know what I'm saying? When you're the best, you don't cut corners.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. God, man.
You know, even though people leave us out of stuff. But the best don't cut corners. I'm just gonna throw that out there.
Wow, we did. Yeah, you're a little surly about that, huh?
A little bit.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
It's all right.
It's okay though.
Some people aren't good at making introductions. Yeah, dude, I'm glad we're recording, man. I needed to record. It's been a rough couple weeks for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm getting my butt kicked here professionally. And, well, not so much. I got a new cat, which is pretty great.
I know. Yeah. What's the cat's name?
Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
I didn't name him.
Okay.
My wife, I threw out a name, and my wife countered with the name that was in that sphere.
Okay.
And then I added on to the name.
Okay.
Zorak the Gorak.
I like it.
Do you know who Zorak is?
I don't.
Do you remember Space Ghost Coast to Coast?
Of course I do.
So I had pitched the name Space Ghost, and my wife was like, Dr. Wife was like, no, he's not a space ghost. He's that other guy that would talk shit from his little keyboard piano, you know, the Mantis guy.
Mm.
And I was like, oh, Zorak. That's right. That's his name. Let's go with that. Zorak.
We'll take it.
Yeah. I was like, okay, that's fun.
Yeah.
That's fun. So, but yeah, getting my butt kicked. We had a couple pitches.
Yeah.
Floating around. Operation Blue.
Yep.
Got pitched around in a few places. Hard rejection. Little brutal.
Yeah.
I think we should share that a little bit.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
I don't know. For me, I've done this a thousand times.
Sure.
Not a thousand times, but lots of times. How was it for you?
It was a little rough. It was, it's, it's hard to be objective, I guess, if that makes sense. It's really hard to be objective because we put a lot into that. And, you know, I am grateful for
the opportunity.
Grateful for the opportunity, especially being my first thing. I don't necessarily agree with some of the stuff that was written, if that makes sense.
You mean like the assessments?
Yeah. I didn't necessarily agree with the assessment. But
I mean, it was a fair assessment.
Sure.
And again, like you said, like it basically be like taking your kid and like, oh, I'm going to judge it for all its flaws. And you know, like there's no love to buffer. It's just straight, nah.
Right.
It's mediocre.
Right. And I think that, I don't know, like, this is probably old news to you and other True. Folks who have pitch projects, but what am I trying to say here? Like it's very gatekeeper, right? If that makes sense. It's like looking for, now this wasn't necessarily the case for this one per se, because I know it got tabled and other people looked at it, but it's hard to find that right person, because if one person who looks at it doesn't necessarily like it, then that's it. Then that's it. It's dead. Whereas, you know, it could actually be really successful if given the opportunity. But then on the other hand, you don't really want it to go somewhere to somebody who doesn't really believe in it. Right.
Right. That was like the first thing I said to you is like,
yeah,
well, if somebody's already out of the gate, like, hey, I'm not into this vibe, then you already know that, like, well, the company is not going to, it'll be a happy accident if it does find some success.
Right.
And like, maybe I'm wrong, but I just from being in the industry, I've seen a lot of time where you get projects where you see people that are 100%. We've seen it. Like, you know, there was a project a couple of years ago where, like, I remember Image came out and they're like, this is the next Walking Dead.
Yes.
And then it came out and I don't know if it was good or bad. I didn't read it. I'm sure it was fine. It had an all-star team, but it flatlined. Like, it just, the sales, I don't even think it finished its run. Like, it was supposed to be an ongoing. And it did like 6 issues and they shut it down.
Yeah.
You know, and that was after like, how much was spent.
So much marketing was done on it. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's even when you do have people who are advocating for it, that doesn't guarantee its success, right? Like, Dick gets it across the finish line, I guess, in the smallest of forms. Yeah. But, you know, and we're not done. There's a few places that we're still waiting on, and there's a few routes. And even then, like, say they say no, if we already have a contingency plan, right?
Yeah. You know,
and
the comic deep state, they don't want it to come out. They're afraid of Operation Blue and what it represents and what it means.
That's right. They're out there just saying no, saying you can't do this, you don't exist. But I'm telling you, they're out there eating babies and we're in here fighting the good fight, you know.
And that's the silver lining, right? The silver lining is that either way, it's going to get made. We want people to read it. We want it to go out to the Tiger Cubs, especially.
And I will say this, there's a lot of books that I've read because the creators involved were like rock stars or people that I was like, they can't do wrong. But then you read the book and the book itself is underwhelming because maybe you purchased it for the art or you purchased it for just the writing and it wasn't symbiotic. And so, like, you know, there's a lot of books I think that do well just because of name recognition or do okay, I guess. I would
at least to start. Right.
Right. I would rather create a project that stands on its own two feet solely based on the execution of the project, because then we'll know exactly, like, are we on the right track?
Yeah.
Or are we? And I'll be honest, like the two things that have done the best for me in terms of sales, in terms of viewership, have been Cretaceous and my very first comic, The Backwoods.
Yeah.
And those were both projects that people told me I shouldn't do. And so, you know, through shape or form, I found a way to get them done.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know. I guess there's that little bit of like, okay, you know, you get that little bit of that chip, that rub on your shoulder of like, oh, the people, like you said, the gatekeepers might be wrong. They might not, you know,
yeah.
might not be. And again, it's no knock at the people who.
Not at all. And I hope it didn't come across that way. It wasn't intended to. Yeah.
I mean, I forwarded you all the emails of like, I was very honest with when we got a rejection, I was very forward with like, ouch.
Yeah.
All that hurts. But thank you for taking the time.
Absolutely.
And that, you know, those are honest reactions. And if people had a problem with that, well, like that's really weird.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you can't, like, wait, you want us, this is the art. Like I know it's commercial art, but it's still, it's art, right? It's
yeah.
an extension of your creative process. So,
right.
Creative soul, I guess, you know, but, yeah, it's a bummer, but you know, we'll see. We'll see where it goes.
We keep going. We're gonna keep moving along with it and find a way to make it happen. So
it was still cool to even have. Like I've never been asked to pitch before.
Yeah,
I always just pitched.
Yeah,
I've never been approached to pitch, so it was nice to do it. Mm-hmm. You know, but it's time. I think our guest is about ready. Why don't we jump over there and then we can. I guess start talking. We can
get into it.
We went a little long. We can get into the other topics.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right.
Check 1, 2.
And we're back with – he's a guy that was on, I want to say like 6 months ago maybe.
Something like that, yeah.
Sometime last year. We'll just say that. Straight from L.A. and into your hearts, Gabe Chen. How's it going, man?
Good. Thank you for having me again.
Glad to be here.
Excited to be back.
Good. Now, our listeners may remember you're a bit of a Kickstarter guru. You've done a few books. We met you through, I believe, Ludi.
Yep.
Over at Warden. And so you've got a new book that's getting ready to drop, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Lay it on us. And then, well, we got some talking points that Brian and I just have to get off our chest.
Yeah.
And we'd be curious to see your thoughts on them as well.
All right. Yeah.
But yeah, tell us about your Kickstarter project before we get
on. Yeah, it's called Stuck in the Middle. It is the last time I was on, I was here for Requiem and Relke, which is a very dramatic, serious action revenge story.
Which I enjoyed, by the way.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah,
I was on with Colleen Palmer, who is the artist, and she's, you know, she's incredible. So Stuck in the Middle is about a reclusive fallen angel who sees a chance to get back into heaven when a nemesis, a demon and former nemesis moves into the apartment next door. So he is exiled in North Hollywood, California, which is where I live. It's in the San Fernando Valley, which is kind of when you think of regular old Southern California suburbia or even anywhere pretty much California suburbia, that's kind of what it is. So it's a very... it's a very unglamorous place for an angel to be kind of holed up for hundreds of years. But that's where he is. And so he is whiling away his days extremely bored and decorating sugar cookies and drinking and complaining to his neighbors. And suddenly he sees a chance to get back into heaven by defeating a demon on earth. And hilarity ensues.
It sounds like a bit of a Odd Couple meets. I don't know if you ever saw the old Odd Couple TV show. What was that? Jack Lemmon and Walter Matthau. Not in the show. In the
that
movie.
That was the movie. The show was Jack Klugman and Tony Randall.
Something like that. I think you're right. Yeah. I always get the movie and the and the TV show confused.
It's one of the most iconic TV openings in history. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it kind of has that vibe mixed with a little bit of was a show on Amazon. Have you seen Good Omen? Have you ever seen it?
Good Omens. Yeah.
When I was flipping through the book, I was kind of like, oh, this is kind of like Good Omens, but like slice of life more instead of like, oh, the Antichrist is showing up. We have
Yeah, that kind of lighthearted satire is kind of what I was going for with Good Omens. I loved the book Good Omens because I'm a big Neil Gaiman fan.
Same.
Yeah. And the show is pretty cool, and he's involved in it, so it still, you know, has his stamp of approval.
Yeah.
But yeah, that and like another book called God's Behaving Badly, and that show Miracle Workers, which is all kind of like a fun, lighthearted take on like, what if being an angel or demon was just like a regular old day job, or like, you know, the divine and the demonic kind of encountering each other on earth, but it's kind of like a modern day thing, not so much a big epic like Hellblazer kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So
right, it's more of like an arrangement that has become like economical for them, you know what I mean?
Transactional.
Like, I mean, whether they want to admit it or not, they're relying on one another for each other's existence or justification.
Sure.
Okay. So it's Kickstarter. Everybody knows the skinny with Kickstarter. But before we get to that, there was like a ton of news.
Yeah.
In the last, like, I'd say 2 weeks.
Some really good.
Some great. Some very, very sad. And let's start off with the big one. Akira Toriyama passed away.
Yeah.
It was actually March 1st, but it got announced to the world, I believe, on March 7th. And it was kind of crazy because I guess you just didn't think. I mean, he was older. Like, I believe he was 68.
Yeah.
69. 68. And it was kind of a shocker because it just doesn't really, in this day and age, it doesn't really seem like that old. You know what I mean?
Right.
And
that was your guy too.
That was that was my guy.
Yeah.
That was my big time. Even though my art is what I do doesn't even, that was the one thing I saw so many people going like, oh man, like I was like without this guy, my art and my projects wouldn't exist, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I get that. But at the same time, like, I'm not even going to like put myself in this like category. Like, yes, inspired so much of what makes you want to be an artist or even be a human. I hold them even higher than that. Like, I don't even want to even voice my own work in the same sentence as his body of work.
And that was a big thing for me, you know, seeing all of that, all of the people come out and talk about like the inspiration that he was and what he meant to so many people. Cause you know, I had never had a desire to ever like read Dragon Ball before. I'm almost done with the entire Dragon Ball saga at this point since he passed. Cause like, my 9-year-old has all of Dragon Ball and DBZ. So I've read a whole lot since he passed away. And I gotta be honest, man, I see it. You know, I see why people really enjoyed his work because I'm loving it. I mean, the fight scenes. I mean, I'm not gonna sit here and like try and break down Toriyama because there are many, many people way more qualified than me to do it. But as you know, reading it for the first time at you know almost 40 years old, it's a pretty neat experience now. I mean, some of it is definitely a product of its time. So, you know.
What, you mean Master Roshi?
Yeah.
Oh, you mean like that's not cool?
The giant pervert that he is. But I mean, the action sequences are second to none. The way that like, you know, Goku is, and he's a guy just with no ego whatsoever. He just loves to fight. And, I think you and I had a conversation about this, about how like even after he beats somebody, they just end up becoming his friend.
Yeah.
Because you just can't help it.
Yeah, because he's not malicious in any way. I don't know. Gabe, did you were you ever get into Dragon Ball? Was the Dragon Ball ever in your
At the risk of alienating you guys and all of your listeners, I have not gotten into Dragon Ball, really.
Get out. Just get out.
I'm like a weekend.
Well,
man.
It was
I'm
nice
like
seeing you guys.
So don't feel bad. I started reading it a week ago. So and
yeah.
Absolutely fell in love with it.
I would say if you get a chance to check it out, not like the cartoon, whatever, is that's part where most people are familiar with it. Mm-hmm. I would say if you get a chance, read the books. It's a perfect blend of comedy and violence and satire. And yep. There's even some like political statements. And
you mean the Red Ribbon Army?
Yes. And there's a lot of like kind of interesting, I guess, you know, it's fun and comical, but at like the deepest point, it does pick at like the, I guess the most basic, human like aspects of being a person, you know, like so many of us for so long, especially when you're younger, because Dragon Ball, it's like the characters are like kids and teenagers and their wants, their needs, they're driven by such simplistic things. And they'll go to the ends of the earth to get it essentially, mm-hmm. you know, which is very true when you're young, cause you're kind of short-sighted. Right. But that's the thing with Toriyama, man, is like, he's got this massive body of work. Like before that he had Dr. Slump.
Yep.
And then I think he had another one. I can't remember what it was that was after Dr. Slump. And he had his own studio, Bird Studios. Like he really did a lot. He's one of the big, I guess, like what they call him, like the big five in terms of like manga over there in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And it's crazy to think that something that was created in like 1987 is still just resonating like nobody's business,
right?
Like today, 2024.
Yeah.
So anyways,
rest in peace.
Yeah.
In power. RIP.
Gabe, you should check him out.
Yeah.
I've never heard it pitched that way. So it does sound, interesting. I mean, whenever anybody tries to explain a manga or an anime to me, like they're, it does reach a point, especially if people aren't good at explaining things, that like your eyes just kind of glaze over.
Sure.
And like, oh, there's spirits and they're in a high school and they're like, So
I also feel like with like anime and manga, because it's just like you get fans that are so, it's like anybody who's such a like a ravenous fan for one type of medium,
yeah,
and they start going off and you need to get it, you're like, yeah, I'm good, like I don't just take everything in, like I'm okay, you know, like,
yeah.
I don't watch a lot of anime or manga.
Same.
The stuff that I go for is the stuff that's, I'm Brian, and I've introduced Brian to a few things. I try and go for like, you know, like the stuff that's heralded as being like really, really good,
yep.
Really, really monumental, you know, Akira or, you know, Pluto,
right.
Or something like that, you know?
Yeah. And I know this isn't necessarily considered, anime, but I have just started getting into Miyazaki, like, and all of those, like, cause you constantly hear about how, groundbreaking those were and how like innovative they were and how, you know, incredibly artistically impressive they are. So, you know, there's things that like, you know, that are good examples of the genre. And then there's things that kind of transcend genre that, that are definitely worth checking out.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
I've been getting into, I guess, Americanized anime with like...
You bastard.
I know. Well, Avatar The Last Airbender is definitely like anime style, but it's... I'm pretty sure it's made in America.
And
it's...
I think so.
Great. I really, really enjoyed it.
How dare you?
Hey, man. It's good. It's good.
What was happening? It's turned into like the nerd podcast.
This is the intellectual dark web of comic book podcasting. So
it's very true.
Well, we can bring it back cool because Gabe, I don't know if you saw this, but this was probably like a few weeks ago. So it's definitely like old news, but it's still, in my opinion, very, very, very relevant to me. But some of the animators of the Into and Across the Spider-Verse movies, they shared some art from a failed Batman Beyond movie pitch in that style.
Yes.
Did you see that?
I did. It was only like two or three stills, right?
Yeah.
That looked incredible.
How do they say no to that? I don't understand it. I don't understand it.
I was not angry. I was not super into Batman Beyond. I did watch the movie and a couple of the seasons, but I honestly, if you asked me to like recall what happened in the episodes, I might not be able to. But like I know that there's just such a huge fan base for it. It just seems like they're leaving money on the table. Yeah. Like the fact that they're not touching. I mean, it's like they've done comics for it.
Yeah,
right?
And the comics are really, really good.
And they're good too. So it's like they're just leaving money on the table, not doing an animated something
Visual standpoint, like how many times are they gonna do Batman and it's the same dark, rainy, gothic Gotham? Like we've seen that since 89 over and over again.
You have the opportunity to do Batman but Blade Runner, in that.
Yeah.
Oh, come on.
And all the the near future aspects that come with it, all the bizarre futurism and artifacts that, you could incorporate into like visually building something that's interesting looking and unique. Look at Into the Spider-Verse, right? So unique, so well done, even though it's kind of like a tire. I mean, Spider-Man, man, like, you know what you're getting.
But it invites new people in that aren't like, and that's exactly what the original show did with Batman Begins and what Spider-Verse did, where it's like, well, I don't know, hypothetical person out there that's like, I don't know who Peter Parker is. I've never read a comic book. I've never seen any of the movies, but what's this? This is a totally new story. I don't need to have that backstory.
Yep.
That brings people in. So it's the same thing with Batman Beyond. It's like, I've never been hypothetical person. Like, I've never been a Batman person though. There's so many. It's too dark. It's too, it's too sad. It's too depressing, too violent. And it's like, but then, okay, like here's this thing like Spider-Verse or Mutant Mayhem, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. It's like, it makes so much sense. It does irritate you that they're not trying.
It makes so much sense, which is why Warner Brothers is like, nah, we can't do that. Give us something else.
Yeah. Well, it's that thing right before you came in, Gabe, we were talking about, cause we'd been pitching, we got approached to pitch a couple things that one of the things was something that Brian and I worked on together and, which was a really great.
Listen, the artist I worked with on that, real prima donna, but anyways, continue.
Yeah, he's an asshole.
Yeah.
It was one of those where, it wasn't so much like Brian was saying, it wasn't so much, the rejection. Because the pitches both to the two companies that we got off were allowed to pitch, it was a no-go, right? Which is fine. But it was kind of the feedback for Brian that was the most like, that's what you got from that? Like,
yeah.
Like, right. That, okay.
Like, it's like, were we reading two different things here? I don't get it. But yeah, it was interesting. I thought that the animators who they like, shared some background on it to where like they went into pitch and as they were before they pitched, they said, hey, just so you know, you can pitch anyway, but there's 100% no way that will ever green light a Batman Beyond animated movie. But they pitched anyway. And they said, oh, this is really good. Maybe. I guess I can hope that all of those stills and everything like that is getting a lot of hype and, maybe going the Deadpool route, right? Like that got Deadpool made, because that movie was never supposed to be made.
I was just going to mention that. Got leaked.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah, it leaked.
Yeah, it's right. Like, Ryan Reynolds leaked it.
Like, yeah.
We spent a bunch of money doing this, what was it, like a 5-minute proof of concept?
Yep.
Just an action sequence.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then the studios were like, no, rejection, stupid. No one's going to watch a Deadpool movie. And then they leak it on YouTube. Oh, no, it leaked.
Yeah.
And it's like, probably what? Like, it's probably at like 100 million views at this point.
Yeah.
I'm probably not even being ridiculous in saying
No.
Well, the Deadpool Wolverine trailer is now like the most viewed trailer in the history of YouTube or something crazy like
makes
that,
sense. Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. So it's like, come on, Warner Brothers. Like, I mean, they haven't gotten a hit on a DC movie in a long fucking time. So, like, I guess I could say I'm not really surprised. So,
I will say it is. I'm curious to see who are the people that were shooting the original Deadpool pitch down. Because I guarantee those guys have gone on to make a lot of money and probably get massive promotions for good job on your success.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As my father-in-law calls it, failing up.
Yeah. Failing upwards. That's how you do it.
Yep. That seems to be how it goes. Speaking of.
Must be nice.
I need to figure out how to do that. Yeah.
Exactly. It's good work if you can get it.
Well, and speaking of someone who failed up.
How dare you?
I wasn't talking about
you. Is this a segue to me?
No, it's a segue into kind of the other piece, staying just on a Batman topic for a minute, because I was a defender of this guy's movies until I wasn't. But Zack Snyder was recently on the Joe Rogan show. I don't know if you saw that, Gabe, if you saw his clips where he was talking about Batman.
Yeah. I mean, at the risk of being the guy that, you know, reads something without listening, you know, because everybody says, oh, it's out of context. Like I read it. So you listened to it?
I listened to a ton of clips. Yeah. So I listened to like the long clip of that conversation. Yeah. Where he was talking about like, and it was an interesting thing where like, I agreed with what he said, but he didn't do any of the things that he said, because he was like, to me, Batman is interesting when you put him in an impossible situation where there's no way for him to get out of it but to kill. And that
Batman
is
killed like every dude he encountered in Zack Snyder's movies.
But that's an interesting piece, right? And then you find a way for him to get out of it without killing because he's Batman.
Yeah, that's the added part that he didn't do.
Right. Right.
And also, like, how does that, what you just said, apply to like a car chase where it's like, there's probably other ways for you to not kill people in a car chase.
Yeah.
Like,
he literally had Superman tackle his opponent across the state so that he could commit like 29/11s in the metropolis. Like,
right. And then into Smallville. Right. And
yeah, it's one of those where you're like, really, man? Like, is Superman just dumb?
Yeah. I can also, like, I can also get behind a piece where, like, okay, maybe it's gotten to a point where he is so broken and he is so angry that he is just killing people. And what does that look like as far as, like, a redemption? They did nothing about that.
Right.
And then we never got to see.
There's no redemption at that point. That's when you have to take him out.
Well, hold on. I'm not there yet. And then there was nowhere to see how he got to that point, right? Why he got to that point. And also, if he is like killing, there is no world in which Batman decides to kill that the Joker is still alive.
Oh.
Cuz that's the first person he's going to find. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so just none of what he said made any sense to me whatsoever. And I hate giving it attention, but it just came up and I think I sent it to you, Tad, and I was like, this is fucking stupid. Like, this makes me mad.
Yeah. You know, I mean, for like, it was frustrating for me because at least in the article I read it mentioned that he, after making Watchmen, was like, well, how can you live in a world where you don't feel like your heroes are corrupt and have done horrible things and embezzled money and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, what do those two things have to do with each other?
Right.
Like, and it just comes down to like, it really, I don't want to accuse any, this is just what I think. That's my preface that like, it just seems like lazy writing to me. Like, just say that you wanted to have a Batman that killed. Like, just say that that's the vision that you wanted, that you wanted it to look cool. And like, but don't say that it was like, oh, you want to paint him into a corner and then see how he gets out. And it's like, so in this world where he's doing that, like he already has in his head, like, this is a Batman that would kill. But like, what is the scenario where he absolutely wouldn't, like, he'd rather die than kill somebody else? Like, how do you get him out of that scenario? Like, tell that story.
Yeah.
Like, like, I don't know. It just seemed like, it just seemed cynical.
And you know what it reminded me of? It made me think of, have you ever gone to like a gallery and before you see the body of work, there's this like amazing presentation from like the presenting artist, and they'll be like, they'll could be cool and funny and articulate, and they'll say all the things that just where it's like, yeah, they're so right. And then you see their work that is going on, like they unveil the piece, and it's like just garbage, or it's just a copycat of like Rothko or something like that.
Right.
And yeah, there's no originality, and you're like, where was that artist statement? Like you know, where was this thesis that you presented us with? And I think that's, I think what we all got to see is how someone like Zack Snyder, that's his name, right?
Yeah.
Zack Snyder.
Yeah.
Gets to continually make movies that underperform to the expectations, as he's probably really, really great at I'm going full circle again.
Yes.
Early. Yeah. At pitching, he's probably really great about pitching a concept, pitching an idea, and then when he gets in there, it's like, well, what would, how, if I was in middle school, how would I write this?
You know, hey, this, the action sequences in those movies are fantastic. I'm not gonna say that they're not great. They are really cool. They don't, you know, but those are the only, like, if I want to watch the warehouse fight scene, I'm not going to watch the entire movie. I'm just going to go to YouTube and I'm going to watch that warehouse fight scene and be like, man, that was awesome. But I have zero desire to watch any of those movies at this point anymore in my life.
I was so disappointed. And even like the warehouse fight scene that ends with like, oh, I'm a friend of your son. And it's like 10 minutes ago, you were trying to kill him with a kryptonite bullet.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And now you're friends.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Their mothers have the same first name.
So that right there, prime example of, to me, the laziest writing in the universe. And I know I've told you this 1,000 times, Tad, where my biggest pet peeve when I'm watching any sort of like show or movie is when there's a situation that if you just stopped and had a 2-minute conversation, nothing would ever happen after that. Like, you know, quote unquote, mystery shows do that all the time, right? Where I hate that. I think that's like, if that's the only thing that you have to move the plot forward, you need to go back and do some work.
I know this might be sacrilegious, but I kind of feel that way about Harry Potter, where it seems like a lot of the mystery of Harry Potter could have been solved if like Dumbledore and Harriet sat down and like, hey, did this happen to you? I was like, oh, is that what happened? Oh, like, oh, okay, you mean that happened?
They had student orientation.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I there's so many movies that do that. It's the ones that are good are the ones that trick you into where you have to hear it like 5-6 years later. The problem I feel like with, I guess, the films that Mr. Snyder makes is everyone's saying that while they're watching the film, you know what I mean? The plot holes are just so in your face, but
I mean, it's visually very arresting.
Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely like he knows how to compose a shot. He knows how to get what he wants out of the light and just control everything in the frame. And it's super cool. But like it's
wasted though. It's wasted storytelling. Like it has no. Yeah.
You wasted Ben Affleck and Henry Cavill, and I will never forgive you for it. Like, so I'm being honest. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm rich. Yep. World's greatest detective. How do you get it done?
And I mean, I'm wealthy.
I have more money than God.
I liked the Snyder Cut for what it was.
I did too.
But I am glad that we didn't get the extended Snyderverse after that.
Same.
And the main reason, at least for me, the number one that comes to mind is that I never bought Lois Lane and Bruce Wayne getting together in the interim between Superman was dead, and that was going to be the whole plot about the next one, and they had a baby.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they had a baby, and that's why Superman was mad
at the end when he dies.
No.
Yeah.
Yes.
No.
I was like, what about anything that happened And then and especially like you never see those characters interact, but why, when they did interact, would they get together? Like, what about anything that happened that would make sense in order to lead us there? And it's like, just like having that be the foundation, that flawed idea be the foundation for whatever it was that the nightmare thing was going to be that we saw in the flash forward.
Yep.
Like it was going to be a train wreck. Yeah. It was just going to be a mess.
Yeah. It was all flash and no substance, man. Really?
Yeah.
That's kind of
pun intended, I guess, but yeah.
That's kind of what he does though. I mean, like if you look, like go back and try and watch 300, right? Like people, like when that movie came out, it was a huge success. People like, I loved it.
Yeah.
I saw it like, three times in the theater.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Sure. I think I was in college and I was like, yeah, fuck yeah. Yeah. And you know, I try and watch it now and it's like, oh my God, this is so dumb. Like it's so like none of
even like the dumb things I feel like are a little bit more forgivable because it seems intentional, the dumb things. Like and even in that one too, there's like narrative guardrails on it where he doesn't go like it doesn't get too much into the other Snyder problems because he's just following the story of the book for the most part.
Yeah, and that book is so short that it really is just about like these moments, these like freeze frames of like awesomeness. It, you know, it's not
100%.
Yeah. Like it's not considered like, you know, one of Miller's greater works because it's not something that has like a ton of depth, character building and stuff.
You know what's crazy? It's 8 years later and we're still talking about Batman versus Superman.
That's how bad it was, too.
Such a disappointment.
Yeah,
I agree. I remember sitting in the theater, and I've used this analogy a lot with other movies, but it always comes to mind for this one. It's like, I felt like I wanted to pick it up and shake it until a better movie fell out.
Yeah.
Where it was like, there's a better movie in here. I know it. It's in here somewhere. And I was just like waiting for it to happen and just never did.
Yep.
That's how I felt with Jurassic World. When I watched Jurassic World, I was just so angry at all of the choices that were made. And I went to like a midnight showing too. Like I was same. Like,
I did Batman vs Superman too. Yeah. I did the midnight showing. Yeah.
And I'm old. So it was one of those where like, I'll do it. And the crazy thing is like, I realized when I was watching it, I remember like everyone in there was teenagers. Right. And you could tell most of these kids had never seen even the first Jurassic Park. They didn't see any of the Jurassic Park. So like for them, like, oh man, this is so rad. This is so cool. I'm like, no, you don't get it. They had a foundation, a foundation to work from, and they completely just burned it to the ground. Like, it's terrible.
Yep.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, that's the modern blockbuster these days.
Yeah.
You know, they're not exactly all flash, no substance.
We do have good things coming out though soon, like X-Men 97. That's dropping. Well, by the time this episode gets released, it will be out and we will be enjoying it. And,
Gabe, did you watch, the old, I don't know. Cause I know you're a little bit younger than Brian and I, did you watch the old, Fox animation, X-Men cartoon?
I did a little bit, but I think that I tried to jump in when it was a little bit too deep into it because I tried to watch it and then just did not understand what was going on.
So it's like picking up an X-Men comic.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But man. No, I because I was watching the Spider-Man show and the Batman the Animated Series around the same time. And yeah, so I remember the X-Men stuff and like just being totally lost and not
that
knowing.
Was like the holy trinity of the 90s for kids, man. Batman, the Animated Series, X-Men, and Spider-Man. Like, it did not get better. Yeah. But, yeah.
Well, I'm 100% the Batman guy. I mean, Kevin Conroy is the Adam West of my generation. Same. So, yeah.
He's the best, man. The best.
I think you could argue that out of all the, like, superhero cartoons that came out in the 90s, that the Batman, the Animated Adventures was the best. Like, it was...
Think that's an argument. I think that that's like,
it lasted the longest. I think it had the greatest impact culturally. I think they took the biggest risks with it in terms of like introducing new characters, and all those characters went on to be,
one of the first like Saturday Quinn. Morning cartoons to get an Emmy.
Yeah.
Like,
well, you know, what's crazy it wasn't even a Saturday morning cartoon. It originally premiered.
Oh, that's right.
It was is at night, oh, like at yeah. 6 at night. It was they were bringing back the old I can't remember what they had. There's a specific term, but it was like, hey, these are cartoons, but they're like for adults, kind of like it's an older audience.
Yeah.
They used to do that like in the 60s and stuff with like Johnny Quest, right? Like Johnny yep. Quest would come on at a later time. So like you could watch it when you came home from work. Cause it's like, you know, it's a men's adventure cartoon,
right?
You know, that sort of thing. And, yeah, because out of all the cartoons, that was the only one I ever really got to watch because in the mornings we were always, you know, out the door way too early. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Man. Like, it was so great the way it built off of the Batman lore, but it was his own thing as well. Yep. It told stories in different ways. I mean, it took it like, I mean, the like I'm thinking of the episode where like I almost got him, I think is what it's called.
Almost got him.
Like,
yes.
The villains are all sitting around telling the stories from their unique perspectives how they almost got Batman. And then Batman is like among them. And then there's like an episode that's from the perspective of a little kid. There's an episode that's from the perspective of somebody that's like the Joker's hostage. And mm-hmm. like
that was my favorite. That one. Do you remember? It was like an older guy. He was
cuts off the Joker in traffic. Yeah.
Yeah. And the whole episode is like the Joker thinking that I'm going to ruin this guy's like life. And the guy ends up like kind of getting the best of the Joker.
Yeah.
And then the whole thing is like, oh man, my wife's going to kill me. Like he had that whole like, who was that? I'm trying to think who played what was that guy's name? He had his own TV show. He was the dad in Elf.
Ed Asner or
no, not Ed Asner.
He was in that show though.
Bob Newhart.
Bob Newhart.
Yep.
Yeah.
It reminded me of like if you threw Bob Newhart from the Bob Newhart show into Batman the Animated Series, like
the Gray Ghost episode where they brought back Adam West,
so good
to voice the Gray Ghost. That was
And they were going against some like guy who was like didn't he have like he was taking like toys.
Oh, yeah. Toy Man.
Was it Toy Man?
I
remember he was doing something with like race cars mm-hmm. and having them like blow up buildings.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Or the one where Bruce Wayne goes or Batman goes undercover as just like a guy. And it was kind of dark.
He goes to like the slave camp type thing.
Yeah.
He goes as Matches Malone, his criminal alter ego.
Yeah. Where they were mm-hmm. like getting like poor down and out guys or like immigrant dudes and then forcing them into the slave camp.
Into warp camps, yeah.
Yeah,
that one.
It was one of those where like you watch it now. I just watched it not that long ago. It was on like YouTube and I was like, fuck, this is really dark for like a Batman cartoon. Mm-hmm. Like this is playing on some like real world shit that happens mm-hmm. where people get locked into horrible situations that they can't get out of, like work camps and shit.
Yep.
Like modern day slavery. Yeah.
And then there was the, like, I think it's a 2-episode arc of like, of the introduction of Talia and Ra's al Ghul.
Yep.
Oh man.
That was so good.
I don't know.
You don't know who it is initially. And then they go like on a little adventure together and then it's revealed to be Talia. And then it's revealed that I wish I remember more of the details, but I remember watching that as a kid and thinking it was the coolest thing in the world. Cause I hadn't encountered Ra's al Ghul in the comics at all.
Oh yeah.
So when that character came in,
that was my first introduction to all of those characters, especially like all of like the ones that weren't on like Adam West and stuff. But then they actually did a really great Talia episode in Batman Beyond. I don't know if you guys ever saw that one.
I know that one.
It was where she puts Bruce in the Lazarus. They like have refined the Lazarus pit so where it doesn't make you insane. And so they put Bruce in it to where he's, you know, become a young man again. Oh man, that was such, and then you find out that Talia is actually Ra's al Ghul. He like took over her body.
But they had hooked up.
Oh, that's some real Frank Herbert shit.
They had hooked up earlier in the episode.
They did. Yeah, they did.
So they're insinuating that Batman got with Ra's al Ghul.
Yeah. Like,
they hooked up.
Yeah.
And Ra's al Ghul's in the body of his daughter.
Yep.
That's some dark shit, man. That is some weird shit.
Yeah.
Like, know what?
I was trying to segue into X-Men and we're like Batman the Animated Series. I mean, it was the best, but... Yeah, I mean, I'm excited for X-Men 97 to drop.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, I really hope that they tap into that energy. Because we've seen things try and get, like, I guess, like, get a revamp, you know?
Yeah.
I just, you know, like, I really hope they tap into that 90s culture. Because, like, that was the one thing that was so great about that Jubilee character. Mm-hmm. Is she was such a, like, mall rat 90s character.
Yeah.
And that, I don't know if, like, a lot of, I mean, I'm sure the people working on it are probably 90s kids, 80s kids.
Yeah.
Mostly. But, like, that is a bygone era that, you know, if you weren't a teenager, at the very least in the 90s, you were completely unaware of. You know what I mean? Like, you just, you didn't experience it.
Yeah.
The whole, like, hanging out at the mall, going to the arcades, the fucking food courts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. They're not a, that's not a thing anymore.
No.
And let me drop some, I want to drop some breaking news, something that, Tad and I have been talking about. Can I announce it here with the X-Men 97 cartoon?
Yeah, I don't know what
yes,
is it.
Yes, you do. We're gonna cover I'm every intrigued. Episode of X-Men 97.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, that's gonna be interesting. That's gonna be really interesting.
I'm actually excited about it. I think that'll be pretty neat. So
yeah,
just to,
every
like,
episode.
Yeah, every episode. Not of the original show, but of the new one.
See, when you first asked me, I thought that's what you meant, and I was like, if you really want to, I'll do it. Like, god damn it. I was like, yeah, and I said to him, I was like, you know, it's gonna take us like 2 years. And he goes, what are you talking about? Why would it? He's like, they're only gonna do like 8 episodes. And it was like, oh yeah, sure, we can do 97.
Yeah. But well, I'm interested to like see it as someone who grew up watching the original show to now watching the, you know, the updated one. So yeah. And then they also announced some new comics that are coming out too. Like their X-Men has been in this thing, and now they're bringing back Uncanny X-Men, which I think is pretty cool. That was like one of their flagship run in the 70s and 80s was Uncanny X-Men. I'm really looking forward to that. I'm probably going to pick it up. Gail Simone is writing with David Marquez, which that's a great. I love Gail Simone's work on Birds of Prey, Batgirl. So she did some Buffy the Vampire Slayer work as well.
Did she do some Red Sonja?
She did like Red Sonja. She's done Domino as well. So yeah, very much looking forward to that.
I need to read more Marvel DC because I don't read them very much anymore.
Yeah, I'm probably gonna pick up. There was 3 X-Men titles announced. So they're bringing back just regular old X-Men with Jed McKay and Ryan Stegman, and then Exceptional X-Men with Eve Ewing and Carmen Carnero are doing that one. But I don't know if I'm gonna get the other two. They seem interesting, but I'll probably at least get the first issue from each of those to just kind of check them out. And because, you know, they do this thing with X-Men comics where if you're like not reading every single one of them, you have no fucking clue what's going on. And I hate that.
I don't think I own a single X-Men like collection just because they're, I mean, I had like a few miniseries from back in the day.
Yeah.
But I don't have any of the newer stuff because it's all like ongoing. I don't want to read 30 issues of something that I don't even know any of the characters.
Yeah.
You know?
So
yeah, I'm hoping, so daunting.
Yeah.
It really is. I mean, maybe that's just me. I like the miniseries stuff. Like give me 5-6 issues of something, even if it's on like a main character, it's just like, hey, here's a standalone story. It's not connected to whatever greater universe thing. But I mean, obviously I'm in the minority because people love,
you know, oh yeah, X-Men still very, love. Very much a big deal. Gabe, yeah, who definitely. Is your favorite X-Men and also least favorite X-Men?
I think that my favorite X-Men is Wolverine.
Yeah.
I've had enough. I had two pretty serious high school football injuries and have sprained my ankle and hit my head enough that'd be like, it'd be nice if I just had a healing factor.
Oh God.
Even a moderate one. Just give me even a low base one, please. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That just be, like Logan, you know, in Logan, in the movie, it's like even the slow, not quite working healing factor is like, oh man, that'd be sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Like that scene where he's,
huffing and puffing, running through the woods. That's like me every time I go running through the woods. It's just, my sister always makes fun of me for it. She's like, oh, look at you running like Logan. Like, that adrenaline's about to wear off, isn't it, bud? Fuck you. Brian.
Yeah.
Who's your favorite X-Man?
I mean, probably Wolverine.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Wolverine and then probably Psylocke.
Okay, I like that answer.
Yeah,
I like that.
Yeah,
mine has changed. When I was a young boy, my favorites were Rogue and Storm.
Oh yeah.
And now, as an adult, Wolverine's probably my favorite. He's I have a bunch of Wolverine books.
Same.
I mean, he's great. I'm sure there's probably some other characters that you know who my favorite. spinoff team from the X-Men was though.
What you got?
Alpha Flight.
Oh, well, obviously I knew that.
Right. That's right. Department H, man.
That's right. All right, Gabe. Least favorite X-Men character.
That's tough. I mean,
is it?
I'm just thinking of like, you know, if I think of my favorite as the one whose powers that I would want the most, mm-hmm. I'm thinking of the one whose powers I'd want the least. I feel like the easy answer is Rogue, right? Because she's so
what?
Has to be so separate from everybody.
she's always my number one. Okay, sorry.
Yeah, my least favorite. I don't know. Just anybody who like goes in to a big like comic book style battle, you're fighting a bunch of sentinels or you know whatever aliens, and they like their power is like I don't know, walking through walls or setting things on fire or something, and they're not like bulletproof or something. I'm just like, this doesn't seem practical. Like I wouldn't want to be that guy.
Yeah, because if you phase like you know like Kitty Pride. She faces like Kitty the dude behind kind of her gets fucking example. Shot.
Oh yeah, there's that too. I hadn't thought I wouldn't want to be behind Kitty Pryde in a battle like that.
Bri, who do you got? Who do you got, Bri? Who's your least favorite?
I mean Cyclops.
Okay, I've got.
I was going to say Cyclops, but I felt like that was too much of an easy answer.
It is
because like, he's a dick. Because he's a dick.
Yeah,
I hate that he's the leader because it's like, dude, leader of what? Like, what do you do? Like, Wolverine's over here, veteran. He's been special forces.
Stealing your girl.
Yeah. The only thing, Scott Summers is like spoiled kid that, you know, gets to go on spring break to Cancun. Like, I hate him. But from a power standpoint, you know who I hate? Who I wouldn't want to be? Angel. Useless.
Honestly, that's...
He can't even fly fast. Yeah,
I agree.
He just flies. Like, oh, yeah. And you're like, wow, giant target. You like, could take him out.
How does that help in a fight with Ultron? Him, you know?
You could beat him with a paintball gun, man. Like, that's how bad he is. He's
pop his wing with a paintball gun.
Pop. Yeah, yeah.
Done.
Like, a 12-year-old could get, like, a high-end paintball gun and beat him. And it's like, well, yeah, Angel's done.
And one of the most... conspicuous too, where it's not like Rogue or Jean Grey or somebody that can hide. It's just like, hey everybody, like,
bro, why are you wearing a trench coat at the beach, man? It's 110 degrees out. What are you doing?
He's flying at a max speed of 20 miles an hour. It's like the speed that like someone could run. Yeah, no, he's terrible. Terrible.
And I only saw X-Men Apocalypse once, but it's like him in the final battle scene of that is like, what is he doing here?
Yeah.
Like, what? How is he a character in this? Like, what is his purpose? Like,
did they make him like Archangel at least?
Yes, I'm pretty sure.
I think like, so.
Archangel, I can understand. He's got the metal wings. He throws the blades. He's like all super strength and all that. Okay, I'll give that a pass. But dude, just straight up Angel. Like, man, the guy's getting. There's just dudes walking the street right now that would just body him, leave him on the side of the road.
Yeah.
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 It's such a one trick power. It's like flight. Cool.
Yeah. Think about it. You could, if he was coming at you, you could just like pick up a rock off the ground. And if you're like somewhat accurate, maybe you played baseball in high school, you could probably beat
him. Listen, like, Randy Johnson would murder Angel.
Oh man, that is a good pull.
The big unit would annihilate.
Destroy. I want that comic. There we go. You know what? I don't want to do my Batman comic where he's just like out of shape and old and gets beat up in a back alley by a drunk guy. I want to do where Randy Johnson takes down the Angel.
Hits him with a 100-mile-an-hour fastball in the wing. Yeah, done. I mean, he did kill a bird. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
No, 100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I watch that clip like once a year at least.
You have to. You have to.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, you know, the X-Men are, I think I'd be curious, like, I'll be curious to see how the cartoon's received. Seems like,
I watched the clip. They released a new clip recently of the first clip of them fighting Sentinels, and it was pretty good.
I only have one thing with the trailer that bugged me that I got to throw out there.
Oh, what do you got?
Okay, so you know, like at the end, everyone was freaking out because like that's such a great concept. Is like Gambit is riding on Wolverine's back, and he's running,
Don't
and
take
Gambit's
this
like,
from me.
"I'm taking it from you,"
God damn
and
it.
He's touching him, and it's making his like adamantium, you know, because like Gambit has that thing where like anything he touches, it's he can charge it with like kinetic energy, so it explodes. And so he's like, oh, he's charging Wolverine so he can obviously slice through anything. Or my problem with that, though, is like, yeah, but doesn't that mean Wolverine's skeleton's going to explode? He's loading him up with like energy. Like, wouldn't that also burn? That means your bones would be like on fire. So like, well, he'd be melting.
Aren't his claws like, yes, they're bones, but they're not like, I think they're a separate part of it. Like, it's not, I don't think it's connected to like his arms.
It's all connected through like ligaments and tissue and stuff. So, and Gambit wasn't touching the claws. He had his hand on the back of, on his like shoulders. Like he was right. Which I want to see that.
Yeah.
I want to see that. I want to see a 5'3", 250-pound dude running with a guy in a trench coat who's like 6'2" riding on his back. I think that would be.
Well, doesn't Wolverine have some level of like enhanced strength too?
I think it just depends who's riding.
Yeah.
I don't think he's. Yeah, I think sometimes they make him like just a real strong guy, and then sometimes they make him where he's like.
I always viewed him as like cap level, right? Like just as far as like strength wise, because of that healing factor, he stays like, you know, his strength stays like at peak human. Right.
Yeah, but even Cap, they do the same thing. Depends who's writing them. Sometimes they make them like Olympian, because I think that's what the idea was in like the, you know, the 40s. But nowadays, some like if you watch, you know, like the Avengers movies, like Cap's practically like, if he wanted to, I think he could throw a car, you know, which I'm fine with because I like Cap. He's my favorite. Like, come on, man, boost the powers. Like, come on. Don't nerf him because he's from World War II. Like, come on, man. Like, you know, super soldier. It's got to fight like, you know, big dogs.
That's right.
I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how the cartoon is received. I feel like this is a comic book podcast. I feel like we've been just talking about like movies, cartoons and shit. What's going on in the comic book world? Is there anything new coming out? Is there anything dropping?
I mean, I did just announce 3 new X-Men comics.
Okay. Well, anything besides X-Men? There's always 3 X-Men comics dropping. There's always 3 Spider-Man comics
that's
dropping.
That's true.
Gabe, is there anything that's on your radar, man? Anything you've been paying attention to?
I'm unapologetically a Tom King fan.
Yeah.
Don't apologize. He's a great writer.
Yeah, he's awesome.
I know people hate on him. So I feel like, I always feel like, I don't know. I think people think that he's maybe pretentious or something, but I think I'm a little bit behind on it, but I guess that I just saw that he is doing another book with, Bilquis Elevy or.
So good.
Yeah. The woman that did,
Supergirl,
Woman of Tomorrow with him. Yeah.
So, yeah, they're doing a Dark Horse book, I believe, together.
Yeah, it's called like Helen of Wyndham or something.
Yeah, right?
I don't even know what it's about, but I'm in. Like, I think I literally saw it like 2 days ago. Like, oh, cool. Like, they're teaming up again.
So is it out now or is it about to drop?
I don't know. Probably. I don't know if they've just announced it and like they've just now started to put up.
I know it's coming out soon. If it's not out yet, it will be probably, I think, in March or April. I know it comes out like in the spring of this year.
Okay.
I've been kind of keeping tabs on it a little bit too. I'm really interested in it just because Supergirl Woman of Tomorrow was so great. And
I need to read that.
Oh,
you know,
dude,
when
it's
I
so good.
Last year when I was in Hawaii, I almost bought it. And I ended up not getting it. I just need something to read, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And there's this little mom and pop comic shop that had literally just opened that week. And they had that. And then they had this Superman Lobo crossover. And on the cover was like Lobo punching Superman in the face. And I was like, well, I kind of – Lobo's – I mean,
he's the main man.
He's the main man. I need this. And then I was so regretting it the entire time. I was like, man, I should have gotten Supergirl. Because there's really no fight. There's no giant super fight, which is kind of lame. But
yeah.
You know.
So I just did a quick Google and Helen of Windhorn came out issue one on Wednesday. So
okay.
Not 2 days ago.
So just dropped.
Yeah. Sweet. Yeah. Okay. Damn. I'm going to have to go back and pick it up then because I was just there. I was just at the shop yesterday, and I did not pick it up. I'm a Tom King fan too. So the only thing I don't like that Tom King does is all of the swearing that gets turned into symbols. That's like just a pet peeve of comics for me. It, not sold to him, but most of the stuff that he writes, he's has swearing in it. I hate that.
Well, they do that for the rating, though.
I know they do it for the rating. It's just a pet peeve of mine. But no,
I agree. Where like I read some comic recently that did it too much. Where it was like, you know that it's it's just going to be a bunch of symbols. Like we're not seeing the F word or whatever. Like why are you making us read this over and over again?
Yeah,
like,
yeah. But his Tom King, Mr. Miracle was one of my favorite, but is one of my favorite just graphic novels, period.
Yeah.
The Strange Adventures that he did with Mitch and then Doc Shaner, absolutely fantastic. And then the Human Target that he just did with Greg Smallwood. So good. So
dude, the colors on that Human Target were so insane.
I know.
The art design for that was just wonderful. Those pages, I haven't even read the book yet. I'm behind on all of these, but
yeah.
From an art standpoint, like I was so impressed, like in the covers that Smallwood did.
Yeah,
man, it's crazy to see where he's at, because I remember when he was out on his first book, Dream Thief, and it's just like, man, he's like on a whole different planet from when because I got to do a couple. He had to leave, I think he got hired by DC or Marvel at the time. And so he couldn't finish it. So I got to work on the last couple issues of his Dream Thief series. He was just moving on to greener pastures, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so crazy to see where he's at now compared to where he started. That's one of my favorite things about like creators, watching them progress.
Yeah.
And Gabe, we've been watching you progress, my man. You see what I did there? Yeah,
that was a nice segue, man. That was, I'll give it like a B.
See, it would have been better if I wouldn't have like patted myself on the back for the nice.
It was a nice.
All good. Yeah, what's a good segue without pointing it out how good it was? You know, it's like right.
I gotta take some credit. You know, come on. So let me ask you this, man, you have a love for like kind of like slice of life type stuff, at least with your character development, but, how was this different than some of the other projects that you wrote? Like, what were some of the different challenges this time around? Like, how are you, you know, were you trying to push yourself in any different areas, trying some like, were you taking any risks that you felt?
That's a good question. I mean, I think that I have been trying to write in Angels and Demons on Earth in a modern world story for a while. So I've had a couple of false starts with it. Couple of like a comedy, a drama. I was even thinking about writing a novel, and then I got like 2 pages into it and then never picked it up again.
Oh,
yeah.
We're going to explore that a little bit more.
And so I've always really loved that dynamic, that kind of that premise. And I always loved just putting them in the modern world. And kind of how, you know, how to do it in a way that it's secret and it is more like a Hellblazer thing or, you know, a Constantine movie thing or, mm-hmm. or out in the open where it's a little bit more like, I love like in comedies when like the amazing becomes the humdrum, like Ted being a good example, like the, how like it's a talking teddy bear, but then at a certain point, like who gives a shit anymore? Yeah. Like,
and it's like, it's not the, him being a teddy bear is not the focus of the scene. It's the dialogue. It's the interaction with other characters.
Yeah. Which, like in, like it would make sense that anytime Ted encounters a new person, they'd be like, holy shit, a talking teddy bear. But like, that's not the world that they live in.
No.
So like, I like, so the idea that this angel is just living in this smaller apartment building and everybody around him is just like, yeah, it's just Dante. It's just our neighbor who's cranky all the time. Like, you know, that has always appealed to me. And so, yeah, I mean, I wrote 6 short stories in the 2020-2021 period where it was, you know, the height of the lockdown, for the pandemic. And, each of them is kind of singularly about something else in the pandemic. And this one, Stuck in the Middle, was really about being stuck in one place and not being able to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And so taking that idea of an angel being exiled on Earth kind of, and putting that into the similar feelings that I and a lot of other people had of like, oh, I'm stuck here. Like this is like my apartment is pretty much it. And I'm not going to be able to get out easily. And, you know, so, taking those feelings and putting that into the character was the main idea. I'm trying to think of your original question and I don't know if I answered it.
I was just asking about like what were some of the, what you felt were risks, some of the challenges and, you know, like your, I would say the risk was your taking aspects of your own experience and you're applying it to these, mm-hmm. you know, these other characters. That's, you know, again, like I said, I guess queuing it up, it was, you have a tendency to really like, just from Requiem, like kind of like that slice of life type stuff. You like to infuse that into your characters. I think that's really interesting. Now, what I want to know is how come, and cause I've been in this situation and someone very close to me is actually writing a novel right now. And I see all the stuff that they have to go through to do it. And so what made you decide that you didn't want to do it? Cause that's something that I've been batting around. There's a project that I've been working on that I have set up right now, that I'm pitching it over the course of this year. And if it's big, right. So like it's already, one company has already said no to it just because it was just too big, right. They're like, we just can't have the budget to do something like this.
Right.
Cause it's like, you know, at least a 1-year commitment for a company to do something on this scale. So, you know, like my other thing was like, okay, if everyone says no, I'm going to try and do this as a novel because I already have it blocked out all the beats for all 11 issues, you know, with setup for expansion. If, you know, so what were the things that made you decide, like, I'm not doing this as a novel. I'm just going to do this as a comic. Like I'm making it sound like a comic is less, but yeah, no.
Well, that particular story, which in a way became the story of Stuck in the Middle, but in a lot of ways wasn't. I've heard, and I think that this is a George R. R. Martin thing, where there's 2 types of writers. There's gardeners and there's architects, where a gardener will just plant things and kind of let things grow and see where they develop. So this is like, you know, Stephen King, who famously just starts writing and like allows his characters to kind of take the story wherever it ends up going. And then architects are like, you have to have the whole thing planned out from the blueprints to the renderings, to the, and then like carefully making sure that you're laying down the foundation and doing it in a certain order in order for it to completely do the house. So like, so I have always felt like I'm an architect type writer.
Yeah.
Where I can't, like, if I start to write something, and when I was younger and I would start to write something, I'd be like, okay, this is a novel. I'm just going to see where this character goes. It'll end up being like 20 pages of them just meandering around doing nothing. And there's nothing appealing or there's no hook to it.
Yeah.
So, so that particular story that I started as a novel was, I was like, all right, I'm just going to try it out and see if I can do this, like as an exercise, like if I start writing and I build up some momentum, could I do it? And the answer was no, like, because I just didn't have the own roadmap of my head of like, okay, where is this going? So I never was able to get the momentum going. And the other part of that is like, I feel like, and you know, this might not be a reason. This is definitely a reason to this is more of an excuse than a reason. Let's say that.
No, it's fine.
Like, I don't feel like my prose is strong enough to paint the visual pictures in your head that I would want to create. Whereas I'm better at working with an artist and being like, hey, this is what this scene looks like. Here's the visual reference for this. Here's the color palette that I want. Here's the expression that I want. Can you make this expression 10? Like, can you increase the intensity of this 10% or 20%? Or like, hey, can you scale down this by 10% or 20%? And like, and dialing it in so I can see like what is in my head is on the page, and working with an artist in that way and doing it visually than I can with like the way that I write, kind of creating that visually and in a consistent way in a novel.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting.
Where, and because I am also so used to writing in a script format and writing it like, this thing explodes, this thing, like in the background, this happens in the foreground, this happens. Like, their expression is happy. Their expression is surprised. Like that. Yeah. You can't write a novel and be that sort of repetitive, like, you know, I do think of my comic book scripts as like, as a letter to one person, which is the artist, where it's like, I'm describing as closely as possible what I am trying to see to the artist who's then interpreting it. Whereas a novel, it needs to be like, it needs to have some prose to it. It needs to have some artistry to it in and of itself.
Yeah. Yeah. There, you have to be able, with a script, you don't have to necessarily establish like this clear voice. Like, you know, it can be kind of dry and cold if you need it to be, where, like you said, you're just laying down the elements that need to be in this scene, essentially, where when you're writing something like a novel or a short story or something, like you need to be able to chew the fat of the scene, like really like get into it. You know, like the best writers are always the people that are celebrated for their, you know, like their bizarre approach to describing familiar scenes, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, I mean, and that's why I said that like this is more of an excuse than a reason, because like I don't feel like I have a voice that I could do that. I don't, but so this is why it's like I believe that I could develop that if I were to work hard at it. But at the same time, I just love making comics. So it's like I'd rather put my creative energy into that.
Right.
Definitely. I think that's like the sweet answer right there is like, I just love making comics, man. Like that's why we're all here in this little conversation. just love making comics. Yeah. No, that's cool. That's really cool. My other question is, cause this is, you know, you're playing with religious characters. And, I think last time you were on here, we talked a little bit about your your upbringing.
Yeah.
Cause you said, I think we did a shout out to your mom. Cause doesn't, I think we did.
Well, hold on. Did she listen?
I don't remember. I don't think she talked to me about it, so I don't remember.
Well, shout out to Mrs. Chen.
That's right. If she's listening, we all love you.
You're the best. So did you grow up in a religious family?
I did. Yeah.
Okay. Did that play into your story at all? Like, did you rely on that a little bit?
Yeah, I think that there's a there's an understanding of the lore. There's an understanding of the mythology that always seemed like inherent, like that was accepted as truth as at a young age that these things existed, or like, or at least that they existed in as much as I see images of them and people like adults talk about them and everybody I know acknowledges that they exist.
Right.
So yeah, that definitely plays a big factor into it. And, you know, growing up and even like the kind of baseline religious studies education that I received of like, well, this religion believes this and this part, this section of this religion believes it and this section of this religion believes it. Like, so there's different ways to interpret this one thing makes it interesting and makes it like, okay, if you can make this joke here, it will upset people. If you make this joke here, people will laugh at it. Like,
right.
So the playing with that is always kind of fun to me when I add the religious elements into the story. And yeah, being aware of that at a very young age, I remember when I was writing like short stories when I was a kid and like, you know, in my preteen ages, like it would be about angels and things like that, because that's who I saw as being heroic figures, as being like
Michael and stuff like that.
Yeah. Like super powered figures, not necessarily like in a biblical way or even in a religious story, but it was like they were metaphysical beings that were, you know, like that were like superheroes. So it's like,
yeah.
So it's like why Angel should work as an X-Men, but in Execution, he doesn't.
I guess they should have probably made him more of like a biblical depiction, right? Like that would have probably made him more interesting.
Yeah. As an X-Men. I mean, sort of like,
maybe like he thinks ability. He's actually an angel and he's like strong and fast. That would actually have been kind of cool.
Yeah. Cause I remember, remember that movie with
John with wings?
Do you remember that movie from the 90s with John Travolta, Michael?
Yes.
Where he played, yeah, it was great. It was great. And he had that awesome scene where he butts heads with the ball out in the field. Yeah. It's so goofy, but I was stuck in my head. I was like, oh man, that's cool.
I haven't seen that movie in so long.
Yeah, yeah, it was a total sidebar, but I think a couple of weeks ago or recently they announced that the Michael Jackson biopic is going to be called just Michael. And I was like, but aren't people going to confuse that with the John Travolta Angel movie from 1998?
They might. Sounds like
so.
It.
I hope so.
Wow. That's really cool. So,
but getting back to the religious question, I mean, like what the... outside of my upbringing, what was the other thing that really makes it interesting for me to add religious elements into my books and you know, with Requiem and Relke and also with For Molly, the main bad guy ends up being a religious person. One of the things that has kind of pushed me in that direction using that is having worked at a Catholic school as a teacher. And having been, and not to say that all religious schools and all Catholic schools are bad, but that the one that I was working at was a particularly toxic work environment.
Okay.
Is that just because of like inner politics, or was it just,
it was because of administrators that were very,
holier than thou
and just generally all the toxic traits of having a bad boss, everything, you know, it was fine for the kids, it was great for the kids, sure. But it was one of the worst jobs I've ever had.
Well, it just goes to show that like any institution, no matter what their I guess North Star is, you know, like you're always going to have some type of like power. There's going to be some power ranking within the institution, and people are always, it always seems like people that are at the top, whether they mean to or not, they take advantage of it in some shape or form.
Absolutely. That's what it was. And couple that with like people, and this happens with high school principals outside of religious schools as well, but like people being like, oh, you're doing such a good job. Thank you so much for taking care of our children. And like, like going to assemblies and seeing them be all charismatic and like, wow, you're so inspirational. I wish I had had a high school principal like you. And they're just like totally terrible bosses, you know?
Yeah.
And like, and so
the ego, man, it doesn't matter what your walk of life is like, the ego always corrupts.
Yep.
Like we all have it. We all have it within us, but it's like some of us, I feel like we find a way to like taper it. Maybe it's just getting browbeat by our parents or something growing up or browbeat by life. But then there's others that like, I mean, I know there's a few people in my life that like, they have egos that I just cannot comprehend. And when you talk to them, it's usually just because they've, everything's been kind of cushy. You know what I mean? Like they just, they'd never experienced any real, like life kicking them in the nuts and things have just worked out, you know, on every, you know, like well, things just work out, you know, I must be great. Like,
or life did kick them in the nuts. And then when they get to a position of power, they just don't care that they're doing it to other people now.
They want to go back and kick everybody else in the nuts. Cause they said,
well, that's it was hard for me. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that like I've always been a believer in like you should be an ambassador for whatever you're if you are able to get good at something, you should be an ambassador for that thing. You know, or at least try to. Even if it's not in your strong suit, like when you do like there's nothing worse than when you go to a convention, you meet some like rock star artist or writer who you've just your work, you have everything they've ever done. This happened to me a few times where and then you meet them and you ask them just the most like softball lobber question and they're just total dicks about it, just total assholes. They're not, they view you more as competition even though you're not even like in their stratosphere rather than somebody who's just trying to follow in their footsteps. You know what I mean? And I don't know, it's always unfortunate, but ego, man, ego's the it's the killer. I guess it also, it's weird, right? Because it's one of that, it's a double-edged sword. Without ego, we probably wouldn't accomplish a lot of the things that we're able to, right? You know, by like, of course I can do this. Of course.
Yeah.
But then it, you watch it like sometimes just cripple people who are just brilliant because they just think, they start believing, they start drinking the Kool-Aid. Like, but anyways.
And there's nothing, I mean, for me, at least there's nothing more humbling than a Kickstarter campaign where it's like 2.5 weeks of like, please, please look at it. Just look at it, please.
Just take a peek, like, man. You might like it.
When is this, is the Kickstarter campaign launching? Is it, it's not up yet, is it?
No, March 20th is when it's launching.
Okay, March 20th. Okay.
So, so this will, it'll be live when we're, when this is up.
All right, great.
So folks, go take a peek. It'll links will be in our in the show notes,
in the write-up.
Be able to check it out. Just give it a look, man. And if you like it,
Give it a look. Come on, get off your sanctimonious high horse, and you know, back this book. Back this book. Speaking of Kickstarter, how you know I've talked to some people. You know, you're seeing a lot of like companies start to jump into the Kickstarter realms for the last couple of years, and they're just, they do monster numbers. And it's kind of changed a little bit of the landscape. I think it's made it a little bit more difficult for, we'll just say like guys trying to pave their own way, guys like yourself, you know, some of the people that I am fortunate enough to get to work with. And, you know, what are some of the things, are there any like, are there any things that you try and do just to get your campaign out there to make your campaign a little bit more interesting? Because, you know, you, Kickstarter, you now do have to compete with, you know, fucking Boom, and nothing against the company Boom. It's just, it's like, really, man, you guys already dominate, you know?
Like, you know, I can't say that I have. I'd be interested because I have seen it like since slightly before Requiem to now. I am seeing more and more of Boom and Skydance and a couple of other people getting on there. So I'll be interested to see how this one goes and if I need to change anything really drastic. Yeah. So yeah, I wish I had a better answer, but I mean, I'm
mostly just curious because I've never actually done a Kickstarter myself. I've done work for some Kickstarters,
yeah,
but I've never actually like, oh, I'm going to do a Kickstarter for this project I want to do. So I'm just kind of curious as to, you know, what other people do. Sometimes, you know, you get answers. Other times people are just like, well, just leave it up to fate.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. What I'm seeing is just like, is still what has worked in the past is still kind of working, which is like trying to rely on people that have, contributed to the Kickstarter before or other Kickstarters. So having a robust newsletter, making sure that you are being consistent with it and putting good content in it and, you know, writing insightful things or putting cool things in there, like, you know, art and covers and things like that. And just having that and giving people something to look at and read in the newsletter and keeping people updated with other Kickstarters and just, you know, hoping that they liked the other stuff that I'd written and finding ways to cross promote and you know, go on podcasts and talk to the creators and get help like that, because it's just like, I don't know, like in the last couple of conversations I've had with people at Kickstarter, they're like, yeah, this is, you know, that's what you got to do. You just got to get to the Kickstarter audience any way you can, whether it's through previous campaigns or cross promotions or something like that. It's just like the people that are on there, they want to find cool stuff.
Yeah.
You know, they want to contribute to people. Yeah, it's just a matter of finding that audience, finding the people that are going to want to back my stuff.
Yeah. So. Finding that audience that's like looking for something that's unique, that's not the bargain box brand, you know, Capes and Crusaders type thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I know Brian, I feel like we primarily buy Kickstarter books these days.
We buy a lot of Kickstarter books. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, like some deliver, some don't, but it's more of the idea of like, okay, you're seeing like other creators who are making a space for themselves without going through dealing with like gatekeepers or, you know, dealing with companies. I'll probably end up doing a Kickstarter next year. And it's mostly just because like I have a project that I pitched last year and, the publisher wanted to do it, but it was just like not at a reasonable, it just wasn't reasonable. Like it wasn't even like a bare bones livable like deal. And it was like, it's one of those where like, I would rather just retain everything and do it on my own and go directly to the audience than deal with.
I've heard a couple of people have had that experience. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just, you know, I don't know. It's kind of interesting that I feel like Kickstarter is kind of wonderful for that, because it seems like it creates that avenue for so many people to just do what they want to do. Like what does the kid say? Let them cook.
Let them cook.
Let them cook, baby. Yeah. Let them cook.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I do think of that often, because it's like, I put a lot of effort into it. It's a lot of late nights. It's a lot of work. Yeah. It's a lot of, it's a lot of like, oh, I wish somebody would, you know, help me out with this, or, you know, I wish I had a publisher to do X, Y, or Z. But, you know, even like when I think about that, but that's like at the end of the day, I can kind of write whatever I want and I have 100% of the IP.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I will tell you right now, there's projects that I worked on where I had to sell half the baby. Let's put it that way, you know, and I'll, in contractually, like, even though I probably had the lion's share, I didn't get the lion's share. Like there was so many things in there, that like either the company just flat out ignored or, you know, whatever. And so I was very unhappy with the few times I've had to work with companies like that. Yeah. So I think it's, that's one of the reasons why we try and spotlight so many Kickstarter creators on here, is just because it's like, man, it's just, it's so great. Now, are you going to, because they do have like Small Press Expo, they have a lot of like smaller indie like conventions that are specific to like creator owned comics. Are you looking at maybe trying to do any of those this year?
I'm trying to. I know there's a couple in Southern California that I'm trying to get out to. I haven't really gotten it together. I need to
at least just to go check them out. Go walk around even, because you never know. I've talked to quite a few creators who like that's how they got their books like up with Image or over with Nobrow or some of these other places. What is it? Small Box or something like that. Is just doing those smaller, like the Small Press Expo out in Maryland is a really good one I've heard for people to do. That and just like you get to connect with so many people when you go, especially like in your area. I think that might be something might be advantageous for you.
I mean, that's the most valuable part of it, especially like you're saying, especially in Southern California, is just the connections.
Just getting that FaceTime with folks. I don't ever like doing conventions, but man, I love interacting. Like Brian's done a few cons with me. I the whole time I'm dreading it. We're driving to the con. I'm like, oh God, it's going to suck. And then as soon as like the people start showing up and you start having like weird conversation, like what we're doing now, just talking about X-Men shit, kind of stuff. You're like, this is the best. This is the best. Like this is so much fun, whether you sell books or not, just interacting with folks. Brian, I think it's time.
It's time for
the
question.
That's right. Wow. Finally.
All right. So, I don't know if you remember this from before, but it's something we ask all of our guests, and that is, given the opportunity to write a comic series or like a mini series of any licensed property out there, doesn't necessarily have to be a comic book character. It could be whatever, a book series of, a character from a book or a movie or whatever, but to make into a comic, what would you want to do?
Don't say The Crow.
Man, that Crow trailer, that was some fun.
Man, that's how I started my day this morning. You know what I just realized, though? The original Crow with Brandon Lee, it's on Prime. I think it's on Prime right now.
Sweet.
You can watch it if you have Amazon Prime, which I just always assume most people have it.
Yeah.
Or I bet you can find it on Tubi, too. I think I'm going to watch it this weekend just because I want a palate cleanse and I want to compare it.
Yeah.
But, this is me. Anyways.
Just the part where he's like, he's putting on the makeup in the trailer, and I'm like, oof, you're showing that in the trailer? Like,
man, did they learn nothing from Jared Leto's Joker?
Yeah, seriously.
No, they saw that movie and were like,
genius.
We've got the idea. We're going to make The Crow, but better. Anyways, continue. Sorry.
I think that my answer is probably painted by the fact that I'm working on my next script, and it's very much a Futurama thing where I'm trying to tell a story that's sci-fi and genre bending and has an A story and B story like a sitcom, and is goofy and is joke based, but is also kind of has a fun premise that I'm playing with and kind of turning upside down and seeing from a couple of different angles. So I can't remember if this is the answer I gave last time, but I would love to write Futurama. I would love to write a Futurama comic.
I think you said Batman last time. I want to say,
I think I probably did. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or
no,
I said Green Arrow. So
something like that. Yeah. I remember it being a DC character. I think that's the first time somebody has just flat out said they want to do like an animated like cartoon comedy, something like Simpsons or Futurama, I don't think any of our guests have ever given that answer. Nice answer, man. That would be interesting.
Yeah.
So with writing like Futurama, you know, like writing a comedy like that, that's, you know, usually comes with a ton of risks. Like people don't realize how difficult it is to write a comedy. I'm guessing that's one of the things that you had to deal with or you're dealing with now.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, in Stuck in the Middle, there's, I had this idea of like, okay, I want to do show tedium of like what it felt like to be stuck in one place and, you know, being on Zoom calls and call and not being able to meet in person. And like, so taking that feeling of like, I talked about how I wrote it during like the lockdown of like, and putting that into the comic. So
yeah,
it was like, write it in a 6-panel grid for 2 pages. And I had to tell Elisa, I was like, don't vary this up. Like I want it to look repetitive. Because the whole idea is like life was repetitive then and
right,
so
forth. Yeah.
So it's like, okay, so then the visuals are going to be this, it's going to be repetitive. So you got to write some solid jokes here. You got to write something funny in here. So getting into that mindset and figuring out what's the fun angle to take on this conversation where I, you know, like I said, I do feel like I'm an architect and I know where I want to start and where I want to go and what the conflict is. So it's like finding those jokes, finding that thing it's a fun mindset to be in when you're writing it. And then when you come up with something good, you're like, yes, like this is it. Like, it's like, so I really enjoy that. And I, you know, I hope but the risk of it is, it's like, I hope other people find it funny, you know? So, and I'm just sitting on it.
It's still challenging.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah. You're making me have flashbacks to, there was a couple years ago, I got hired by a magazine. They were working with an Instagram influencer out of Texas. God, I can't even remember his name. Fuck. Anyways, it was some like Instagram famous cowboy, right?
Oh, and, yeah. I remember this.
And they wanted me to like, hey, will you go through his video? We've signed a contract. He signed off. We want you to do a comic strip of him. But so you have to do a monthly like half page strip. And it's just some kind of joke. And all of his jokes were like, they were just random, right? Like, you think about any kind of like TikToker or like influencer on Instagram that's trying to be funny, right? It's just whatever, it's
like
they
big reactions, like random.
Yeah, it's just random
shout outs and things like that. Yeah.
Yeah, just goofy shit, like kind of goofy shit. And I'd emailed him like, oh, hey, do you want to collab? So I like, you got some jokes or something that you'd like me to, and radio silence. And like, so I was like, oh, cool. So I'm shooting like in the dark. Yeah. I would come up with for each strip, like 5 or 6 different scenarios. And like, maybe one of them would get the A-OK. Like if that would be like in a good week. And so then I would hammer it out. And like, by the time I got through like editorial and stuff, I don't think a single one of the jokes like really, they because it was, you know, it was an all ages, you know, like most of people read this magazine. It was a Western magazine. So right. They're, you know, most of the people who read it were like older. And so they didn't even know who his name was. Dale Brisby. I did a Dale Brisby.
Yeah.
He was on Rogan a couple months ago. He had a Netflix show like last year or 2 years ago, something like that, which is crazy. But yeah, like years ago, I did a little comic show, like we did 12 or 13 of them. And, yeah, there was like one that was actually I thought was funny, and it was where his horse, he's riding his horse and he has to go to the bathroom, like diarrhea hits. And so he's going to the bathroom and he's set up the toilet paper on the on his saddle. And then his horse just walks away while he's going to the bathroom. So the joke was while he's like calling out his horse's name, that we've watched this time pass. So like it breaks to like, oh, it's now midnight. He's still sitting out in the field, you know, without anything to like wipe his ass, essentially just like calling his horse to come back. It was so dumb, but that was like the kind of stuff. And I felt like it was one of the hardest challenges I've ever had to do as an, as a, like a comic creator. Cause I'm not good at doing not that kind of comedy. You know what I mean? Like, I just can't do that. Like, I make funny looking characters and stuff, but not like straight up writing. So I commend you for going like, oh, I'm going to write, do an entire comic comedy thing and continuing to do it. Cause like, I, no way, man. Like, get me out of there. I can't do that
stuff. Yeah. I mean, I feel like if I can get one good joke, because they're short stories. So if I can get one good joke in there that maybe like, one person that reads it like this joke, or one person reads it like this joke. So I guess not one good joke, but if like, what if people walk away from being like, yeah, that joke was really funny. Like, and maybe it's a different joke for each person that reads it. Like, I'm happy with that. Like, and if, but you know, and really it's like, if I can write a joke that every time I reread the script or I'm thinking about it, I'm like, you know what? That's a good one. Like that's good. Then I'm feeling good about it, feeling accomplished, feeling like I'm actually doing something. Like there's a joke in Stuck in the Middle that I'm really proud of. And it's not too spoilery. But Dante, who's the angel, is talking to a neighbor. And Dante is saying, you know, I need to get back into heaven. I want to get back into heaven. That's his whole goal for the book. And the neighbor says, well, you know what you need to do is you need to meet, like, you should get out of your apartment and meet other people, because you know what they say, heaven is other people. And Dante responds, they do not say that, because of course the expression is hell is other people. So
that's pretty great.
I was really, really proud of myself for writing that joke.
You should. That's
very
good.
Good.
That's really good. That is good dialogue, man. That is really good. Yeah, that's pretty.
Thank you.
Hats off to you. I couldn't do that.
So I love that challenge. I love being able to sit back and be like, that's a good joke. Like, that makes me laugh. And you know, like we were talking about, and I'm not doing this for a publisher. I'm not doing it for an editor. I can kind of do whatever I want. So if I can get an 18 page comic that has, you know, a joke on it, every joke is something that I am proud of, that I personally think is funny, then, you know, I'm feeling accomplished.
Well, that, and comedy is so unique, because it's like, you have to be true to yourself. Mm-hmm. I think the worst comedy, the comedy that doesn't hold up, is the stuff that you can, you know, that was, I guess, has been edited, you know, by a publisher or a network or something like that. Like, there's a reason why so many standups these days are just straight up like, I'm going indie route. Like, I'm going the indie route. I'm just going to do my own stuff. Like, I can do just as well through TikTok and YouTube or whatever.
Yep. Right.
Signing some kind of contract and having people tell me what I can and can't do. And as much as I like the people, when I worked on that little comedy comic, all the best jokes got thrust in the trash, because they're like, oh no, this is inappropriate. This is going to offend somebody, or this isn't it's too risque or something like that. Even though it was always like at the worst PG, you know, I think that's great, man. I think that's awesome. So do you think that's going to be like the route you're going to go down for a little bit? The road is you're going to go down the comedy path? Cause it kind of sounds like you're steering down that way.
Yeah. Yeah. I have this book, and then my next one is going to be another comedy like this. It's going to be another comedy short story that's going to lead into a limited series that I'm working on right now.
Very cool.
Can we get a title? Is there a working title?
Yes, it's called This Seems Normal.
This Seems Normal. Oh, that's a good. Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm into it.
Good title. Yeah, okay. Man. You're good. You're a good title. Those you can come up with them, man. I like it.
Oh, thank you. I try. I don't know. I wish I had a secret to it or some sort of piece of advice, but yeah.
No, that's right. Awesome. Yeah. Okay. Now we're winded down. We're right at the end.
Yep.
So it's book club time.
Woo.
Gabe, what do you read, man? What comics you got sitting on the nightstand?
Well, definitely the Tom King one for sure. And then I don't have my tablet reader in here with me, but my actual comic book club, we are meeting on Sunday and we are reading, I want to get all the
You got a comic book club? That's fucking cool, man.
Wait a second. Yeah. Like, sidebar, comic club? What's going on here?
Yeah, comic book club. Is that like
a book club?
Yeah, it's a book club, and like it started a couple of years before the pandemic. I joined in I think 2018, and I think that they'd been going since like 2016. But yeah, we went virtual for the pandemic and kept it going, which was great. And then, so we've gone every month we're virtual. And then every 3 months we're meeting in person for the people that still live in LA. Cause there's a couple of people that moved away that join us. But yeah, we choose a book, we rotate DC Marvel Indie, and then we read it and talk about it. It's usually just, you know, a collected trade paperback. It's usually either the beginning of a series or somewhere that's easy to drop into a series.
Dude, that's cool. So what are you guys reading right now then?
So we are reading Mouse Guard 1152. Which is by
Temple Smith or Templeton?
I'm trying to find it.
Jesus, somebody's screaming at us right now. You don't know Mouse Guard.
Sorry, loading slowly. This is awful to listen to. David Peterson.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I can't find the publisher right now. But yeah, it's an indie book. It's not one of the bigger publishers, I don't think. Like, it's not Image or
I want to say Mouse Guard is kind of been with a couple different houses, because Mouse Guard was big for back in like I want to say like 15 years ago. Mouse Guard was huge, wasn't it, Brian?
Yeah, it's been around for a while.
I'm not familiar with it, so
yeah, like I'm pretty sure it's because they did a lot. There's quite a few, I want to say a few volumes of it.
Yeah, but it's like it's medieval quest and like knights and chivalry and stuff, but they're all mice and they're living in the wilderness and they're being hunted by predators and they're fighting each other, and there's castles and fortress cities that are very medieval and Renaissance looking, and the art is very cool. And it's my first time reading this. It wasn't suggested by me. It was suggested by somebody else. So I enjoyed reading it, and
that's cool.
Yeah.
Do you think you're going to continue with it and read some of the other volumes maybe, or?
Maybe. I think that the story that's in there is wrapped up really nicely. So it's not like, oh, I have to figure out what happens after this cliffhanger. But it's definitely my cup of tea as far as like an interesting take on things visually, an interesting kind of homage to, you know, like I said, like chivalric and like knights in armor kind of stories. So I kind of liked it for that reason. So I think I would try to continue with at least the next part of the series.
That's a great way to like just get introduced to different new creators, new stories, new characters. I really like that. That's really cool.
It really is because I'm not a huge Marvel guy. Like, I didn't grow up reading it, and a lot of the people in my group are. So when they're suggesting the Marvel books once every 3 months, it's like, okay, this is a good idea for Marvel. And then like when I read it, I'll be able to talk to them and get context for what was going on. And
so that's cool. Brian.
Yeah.
I know what you read, but let's hear it.
Besides the 15 volumes of Dragon Ball that I read, I actually read, I wasn't going to talk about it because I feel like I already talked about it earlier. But I did pick up the newest Black Label, DC Black Label book called The Batman in First Night. So,
How was that? Was that good?
Yeah. So this is a book. It's written by Dan Jurgens, art by Mike Perkins and Mike Spicer, color by Mike Spicer. Ooh. So really good. I mean, the art in it is, I mean, it's, let's see if I can find a page to show you guys on this visual medium that we do here, but
that's cool.
So it takes place in 1939, which is the first year of Batman, the year that Batman came out. So it's like a lot of like they're talking about the stuff that happened in World War One as World War Two is looming on the horizon, which I think
already be going on.
Well, the U.S.'s involvement in World War II
Yeah,
right.
hadn't happened yet.
Right.
So
not yet. Yeah.
So yeah, so it's like a murder mystery Batman book, which in my opinion are always like those detective version ones are always kind of my favorite ones. And they use like the art design being like the gothic Gotham with that original costume, you know, with like the purple gloves and all of that from when he first came out is really cool. And it's like it kind of has like a little bit of a supernatural element to it as well. Yeah, I think it, you know, it was a good first read. Left a lot on the table for me to like not in a bad way, but it kind of I feel like first issues to be a solid first issue, it gives you just enough to keep you going, right? If that makes sense. Like it introduces you and it gives you enough to keep you on the hook for the next issue. And I mean, it ends with, you know, Batman breaking into Blackgate Prison because they're finding prisoners who have been executed are the ones who are committing these crimes. So someone is quote unquote resurrecting them have them, some crime boss is doing that. And so, you know, Batman gets the crap kicked out of him by a electrocuted dude who doesn't feel pain, essentially. And it ends with him breaking in and then getting surrounded. And now he's getting electrocuted. That's the last page of the issue is Batman in the electric chair, which is pretty cool.
Cool.
Yeah.
So is he dead? Did they kill him?
Well, no, you can't kill Batman.
Is that the end of the series?
That's it. One issue, it's done.
That's how I want it. That's my kind of Batman.
So does he get in his plane and like shoot a bunch of people with machine guns? Like, is that?
He killed every single person in the prison. They're all dead. Problem solved. Yeah. No.
I'll never kill unless my back's against the wall.
Stupid. But I think, you know, everything from like, you know, one of the biggest things for me is, it's not just the art, but also like the layouts really easy to follow, you know, cause you've had that issue. We've had that issue before where like, you don't know the flow of which way the flow of the page is supposed to go, you know?
The flow. Yeah. It's good. Storytelling is sometimes a lost art in the comic medium these days. And, maybe I just, because I grew up reading the old timey stuff, which that was the best skill they have, where now it's like, man, everything that you can do on the page is so amazing and endless. Mm-hmm. I feel like the art that sometimes storytelling is becomes secondary to flash, you know, kind of because Zach got a full circle again, Snyder-ish.
And I think this book really balances that, the flash with the flow.
Flash and flow, baby.
Nice.
I like that. So yeah, put that on a t-shirt.
I think it's a great read. I highly recommend picking it up if you are not even just a Batman fan, but I really like the period pieces when they do these like kind of Elseworlds stories set in different eras. you know, Gotham by Gaslight, Red Sun. All of those that just kind of take place in different times and places. I dig that. And they haven't really done something that they've done like Batman Year One, which is obviously one of the best Batman stories ever told. But this one is different because it takes place not only early Batman, but also, you know, he didn't have the Batmobile yet. He didn't have like all of the gadgets that he has now. And then because it takes place in the year that he was created, which I think is really cool.
That is cool.
Yeah.
That's very cool.
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
Cool. So, highly recommend it. Highly recommend checking it out. And like the cover, I really love the cover design because they made it look like an old comic.
Yeah, you know what it actually looks like? It looks like an old, like one of those like 5-cent novels.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's
what it kind of reminds me of.
Yeah. It definitely looks like some of the pulp, the detective crime stories and stuff from back in the day. Mm-hmm. Kind of has that vibe.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I did not read something that was
piece of shit.
No, that was like that. I read something that was like, what's that band that you turned me on to? Austrian Death Machine.
Yeah.
So take Austrian Death Machine, turn it on full blast while you're bombing down a fucking snow-covered mountain in a car, in a front-wheel drive car with no brakes.
Yeah.
That's what I read this book called Bloodrick.
Oh, I know. I picked it up based off of your recommendation. Haven't read it yet, but I got it.
Dude, it's fucking awesome. It's almost like short stories. I'm curious to see if it's going to go into something bigger. I think it will, but it's just this like starving barbarian dude who just, he's like, I need to kill something before. and he's like, so he's like cursing nature. He's cursing his existence. And then like, you know, like he even has like an out of body experience at one point, and then finally kills an elk only to like have to fight a bear. And it's just done like, even like the bear fight is done in such a fucking rad way, mm-hmm. where you get lost. Something as turbulent as dealing with a wild animal, especially like in close combat, it's going to be one of those things where everything's happening so fast that you can't like actually gauge it. You know, it's not going to register. Everything's going to be a blur. Well, this the artist and the writer, a guy named, I think I'm saying his last name correct, Andrew Kronk. He did that, like, and obviously listeners can't see this, but
that's very cool,
right? But like, it captures the entire like craziness of what it would be like getting mauled to death by a fucking grizzly bear. You know, it would just be insane. And then there's like another sequence. There's another short story in there at the end. It's almost like two parts in the first issue, like where he's again hunting. He's hunting a grouse, and it's behind this tree. And he's got his bow, like, I don't know what it's called, but not cocked, but he's got knocked. He's got it knocked, right? And it's an old style, like, handmade longbow. So it's like, it's already probably taken like 100 pounds of like strength just to pull it all the way back. And he's waiting for this fucking grouse to come out from behind this tree. And the grouse isn't coming out from behind the tree. There's no other things around it, right? So he watches it go behind a tree, and he's just waiting to get that headshot. And then the whole comic is him holding that arrow notched, and his arms are just burning. And it's like, you get to like, at one point there's like this great drawing of like his arms on fire. Cause he's like, God damn it. No, like my mind must be steady. I have to hold it. I'm going to kill this fucking thing.
And there's other
animals like cruising around him, and he's like, oh, maybe I could kill it. And then it jumps away, and he's like, no, don't hold fast. And then, you know, and well, you'll see how it plays out. I don't want to ruin it, but it's just one of those, like, I've been wanting something. I've been reading all these books that are like, you know, a little existential, and, you know, I wanted something that was just like, oh, that's the only way I can describe it.
Yes.
And this book does that, this book does that. Like, people buy Bloodrick, follow Andrew Kronk on Instagram. He might be one of my new like favorite artists. I'm gonna do everything I can to get him on this fucking podcast, because hopefully he's as cool as his art is. And even if he's not, I don't care. He's a really good storyteller. He has a little it's interesting, this was like 10 years in the making. He's been working as a professional artist, but I think it was one of those things where like he's got this great little introductory comic to like who he is on the very first like inside cover page.
Oh, I like that.
And yeah, it's very cool. And he just talks about how he's been writing this and doing character concepts and picking at it. And basically it was like 10 years had gone by and I've never done anything with this fucking character. I've been picking at it and rewriting the same thing over and over again. And now he's like, fuck it. I just need to sit down and do it, which, you know, like we've all been in that place.
Yeah.
Like I have a character like that I've written and written and written and done, like, I don't know, every couple of years I'll sit down and crank out a bunch of concept art for it and then like throw it all in a file to never see the light of day again. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It was very inspiring, very inspiring. Like this guy is, we need gentlemen like this. We need ladies like this in the world that can be our creative North Stars, that get the blood pumping where we just want to create. Yeah. Sorry.
So true. But,
yeah.
Anyways, I like it.
That was what I read. So
killer.
Boom. Yeah. It was killer, Brian. There was blood. There was murder.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, on that, I think I'm going to take us home.
Okay. All right.
So, Tiger Cubs, if you're tuning in, thank you so much for still being here after the after everything that you witnessed. No, I'm just kidding. It's always a pleasure to be here for all of you. If you want to follow us, if you want to support the podcast, and find ways to get the episode to just come to you, so you don't have to search for it. You just go to our website, bluetigerrevenge.substack.com. Subscribe. It's free. It's always gonna be free. And then every time we post something, you're just going to get a nice little sweet email notification in your inbox, and, you'll know that the new episode is up. And, also, like, you know, share it with all of your friends, all of your enemies. Everybody needs some tiger milk in their lives. Follow us on Instagram at Blue Tiger Revenge. We try and post stuff when we can, and when we do, it's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
I mean, when Tad posts stuff, it's pretty sweet. Gabe, thanks so much for coming on, man. Where can folks go to find you and the Kickstarter that you have going right now?
Yeah, first and foremost, kickstarter.com, and then search Stuck in the Middle. One-shot action comedy adventure, I think is what it's called. Actually, let me double confirm that. Stuck in the Middle, a one-shot action comedy. And other than that, you can find me at GabeChangComics.com or at GabeChangComics on Instagram.
Excellent, man. Well, thanks so much for coming on. Hopefully, we wish you the best on your Kickstarter, not only this one, but all the ones you got coming out in the future. Looking forward to checking it out, man.
And, yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for having me again, guys. It's a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Good. Anytime. And that is all I have, Tad. Do you have anything else?
Normally, I would say no. I'm all out of tiger milk, that I'm bone dry. The nips are dry.
Yeah.
But that's not the case this time. I have a little bit more left in the tank. Folks, March 27th, mark your calendars. I know I've been.
Will this episode be out by March 27th?
I should be.
Okay.
I think so. Okay. Well, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Go to your local comic book shop. Order First Americans. First issue drops March 27th. If you can't get it there, you can get it from criticalentertainment.com. I'm not going to put a link in the notes, but if you do a search for First Americans, you can get it. And they also will be, I think, at Anaheim Convention that's coming up very soon.
WonderCon.
WonderCon, thank you. Will be at WonderCon very soon here. Also, that's not the only thing. Not only order First Americans, but if you want to read a weird existential comic that probably no one would ever want to publish, but it's of my own creation, my own device, my own inner weird workings, then subscribe to my Patreon, $5 a month. I know I said I'd never ask for money, but I'm asking for money, damn it. $5 a month, and you will get instant access.
And that link will be in the show notes.
That will be in the show notes. You'll get instant access to Taiga. Taiga, that's right. What happens when a 30,000-year-old god wakes up in the present world, and how do they perceive it? It's not going to be good. It's not going to be great, especially if you're a person and you come across it. if you want to read that, sounds remotely interesting, check it out. Like I said, it's on Patreon. It's called Taiga. And now I am completely just dry. Not even a drop.
Well, if that's the case, what time is it?
Hit the music.